Welcome to Indie Music Explorer. I'm Dan.
I'm Jack.
And we're the Barton Brothers. We are Denver-based songwriters and performers committed to uncovering the tricks and tactics that independent artists are using to succeed in the new music business.
We sit down with creative people of all types to get their insights, and we'll share our own personal thoughts and experiences along the way.
So enjoy the episode. Today on the podcast, we speak to Michaela Dooley. She is a Denver-based pianist, performer, singer, songwriter, teacher, organizer extraordinaire. The three of us went to UNC together in different programs and in different classes, but we've kept track of what she's been up to over the last several years and have been really looking forward to reconnecting, and you'll see why. Well, I hit on this subject often enough that if you listen to this podcast regularly, you'll be able to tell that we're really interested in artists who are investing in their community and trying to create the scene that they would like to participate and succeed in. There are plenty of folks who are trying to milk a scene and its connections for all that it's worth, but we want to highlight people who are trying something new, creating their own opportunities, and creating opportunities for others. And that is what Michaela does. You'll clearly be able to hear that her main objective is honest expression and genuine connection, and not profit or popularity. Her experience has taken her from the ultra-competitive world of jazz performance into a nurturing space of like-minded creatives, away from more rigid and competitive structures. She currently has two projects, Moonglade and Nothing Is Everything. She's a full-time music teacher in Denver, and she hosts a live piano bar karaoke night on Mondays at Pride and Swagger. I hope you enjoy this chat, and look out for a quick cameo from Michaela's mom, who is in town visiting for the week, and she got to chime in from the Peanut Gallery. Get in touch with us on Facebook and Instagram at The Barton Brothers and email us at info@thebartonbros.com with any comments, questions, or guest suggestions. With that, enjoy this chat and we'll see you next time. All right. Well, thank you so much for being willing to come sit down with us.
Yeah, thanks for asking me.
Yeah, our pleasure. What are you all up to this week?
We had a family reunion this weekend, spent some time camping, so that was nice. And back to work this week, so I'm just teaching a couple days.
Uh-huh. Is it at the school in Stapleton?
Neighborhood Music.
The whole gang teaches mm-hmm. at? How's that experience been?
It's good. It's really nice because I don't want to do any of the logistics, like scheduling or billing. Or having those conversations. So I just show up and teach and have my schedule set for me already. And my boss gives me a lot of freedom. It's a studio with probably 50 different teachers. So there's no competitive ownership type vibe. It's more like kids can try out different instruments, different teachers, find the fit that's good for them. So it's nice.
And if you happen to be out of town or having a family reunion, are there, like, do different teachers sub in for you if they can take extras?
Yep.
Do you just tell them to take the week off?
Yep.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, you know, whenever I get, like, the teaching bug, like, do you start a studio from scratch and try to, like, market yourself? Or is it just, like, worth it to pay your cut to
yeah.
someone else to basically
I've hand done
you
both.
A studio? Yeah.
When I first moved here, I was trying to do it all myself and just not organized enough for that.
Yeah.
So this
takes a certain type
easier.
To be good at
yeah.
all the aspects of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so tell us, for the people who don't know anything about you, just give us like a little basic self-introduction, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a household of music. My mom's a music teacher. So lots of exposure to classical music and jazz at a young age. And I played piano from the age of 5 on and picked up flute around 9 and then trombone when I was probably 14 and just recently started teaching myself guitar. So after doing all the activities in high school, you know, marching band, jazz band, vocal jazz, honors choir, every single musical thing I could do. Then I decided to go to college out in Colorado here for jazz piano performance. And that's where I met you guys, at University UNC of Northern Bears. Colorado. Woo. Yeah.
What was it like having done all of that? I imagine, is that the most stressful decision as a, what, 16, 17 year old? Like, because everything feels so like, you know, at life or death at the time, like to say jazz piano, what kind of.
Yeah, it was kind of a decision between classical flute and then jazz piano. And,
you know, next door neighbors, same career path.
And at that point, I kind of just thought about it in terms of how could I be successful in the music world? How many jobs are there for each of those areas? And if I wanted to be in the top of the game with classical flute, you know, there's only like 50 orchestras.
Yeah.
If you look at the state or, you know, state symphonies that you could be a part of. And just kind of seemed like jazz piano would give me more flexibility. And I also had a really like large interest in songwriting, was listening to Nora Jones and Sarah Bareilles and Perfect Corinne Bailey Ray. And like all those songwriters in high school were really influential to me. So jazz seemed like the avenue where I could do all of that.
Yeah. Did you notice when you were pretty young that you had a strong tendency or like, I guess, a strong ability with jazz? Because I think there's a really strong difference between people who, or not difference, but it's always impressive, I find, when people who have a classical music skill set can also jump over and be really good at improvisation and chord charts. And when did you kind of find out that that was your strength?
I felt like I was late to the game, actually, because it was the end of high school when I finally found a jazz piano teacher. In South Dakota, there wasn't a lot of jazz. So I found somebody and he started working with me and really helped me make that decision that I could pursue jazz and showed me that I did have the ability to learn. And I guess I was drawn to it. Like, yeah. Maybe there was some natural improvising talent there. I don't know. Mom? Yeah,
outside witness.
Yeah, I think you had a natural knack for it. but not a lot of opportunity, really. So, so when that all came together, it was really fun to see.
So essentially you had one strong year of training before you went to UNC, which is a really strong jazz school.
Yeah.
What was that audition process like? Was that extremely intense and intimidating?
Oh, yeah. I cried. Oh, yeah. It was intimidating. And then when I got in, I was shocked. And especially because I didn't realize that all of the other students were pursuing their master's or their doctorate. And they had 10 plus years on me. And it was the first time they had allowed undergrads into the jazz piano program.
Oh, so you were like a guinea pig.
Yep.
That's cruel.
Yeah, so a lot of trial and error and just like, you know, learning how to communicate with your teacher about your learning style and how to have those conversations. Lots of feeling like I would never be good enough.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there experience? I mean, I imagine there's probably a learning curve for those professors, too, who are all of a sudden dealing with someone with a year of experience as opposed to someone who's getting their master's degree. Did they have to kind of like slow down?
Yeah, I had to be like, can we break this down even more and ask for really specific, you know, it probably felt like spoon feeding me.
Right. But talk to me like a 5-year-old.
Yeah. Like, yeah. A lot of it went over my head at first and I'm like still integrating 4 or 5 years later, you know. Going back and remembering things that were said and like things that were explained to me and the knowledge is there, but now I'm starting to apply and use it myself and really understand it.
Not just like as a theoretical concept, but something you could use.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that is a huge difference.
Yeah.
Well, did you feel like the company kind of welcomed you in when you came in, or was it immensely intimidating with all these older students who had crazy chops?
They were not pretentious at all. So I think it was a very like encouraging environment. The jazz program was pretty small, like 50, 60 people. So it felt kind of like a little family that was just, you know, patiently being there with me.
Yeah, and you get a lot of opportunity to actually, like, to play and perform. It's not like in some, you know, programs that are just like giant machines that have whatever hundreds of majors, like, you know, you're getting the private instruction, but maybe you don't get really any chances to perform and, like, figure out.
Yeah, this was very interactive at UNC, especially the combo classes where the whole program would be there every week and you would have to get up during the semester and play whatever tune was called. So you had to know the tune, you had to be able to solo and hang with whoever was up there. Like, it was all the levels playing together.
So many nightmares.
Yeah. And then our juries were kind of like that too, except with the faculty. So, you know, you have a list of tunes and then they pick the three. You don't know which ones you're going to play, and then got to be able to hang with those guys. So yeah, lots of opportunity, and I think it helped me to be around players who were a lot better than me. I've always been lucky to be around groups of people who can help me get there.
If you can manage to not be so intimidated that you quit, you, like, they bring you up to their level faster than you would otherwise.
So you graduated in 2014, correct?
Yep.
With a degree in jazz performance, I'm assuming.
Yep.
What's your thought process as soon as you graduate? What are you thinking? Where is life going to take you from there?
Oh man, I was kind of terrified and had no idea at all. So I moved to Denver and tried to start teaching and have my own studio, and it was like pretty bad time for that. Just summertime, it's hard to get people to commit. Right?
Yeah.
They all want to go camping all the time.
You could have waited until September when people are back in school and, like, picking up activities, but...
Yeah, so I kind of just hung out for the summer and gigged a lot, did a lot of weddings and played things like that. And then got the call from an entertainment company to go work on cruise ships. So I did that on and off for about 2 to 3 years.
Talk about that experience a little more. What was that like? I've heard a lot of mixed reviews from cruise ship performers.
Yeah, I mean, every job has its pros and cons. I got to go see places I never would have before, and meet people from all over the world. And I think that was the coolest part to me, to see how music is this universal language and you can connect with players that you have seemingly nothing in common with, right? Like, maybe you can't even communicate very well in English together, but then playing together, it's a different thing. So that was the cool part for me, seeing all the different cultures and places in the world and getting that travel bug and wanting to go explore even more. I think the cons, you're obviously on somebody else's schedule the whole time. You know, if you don't make it back to the ship, they're going to leave you. Mm-hmm. So you've got to make sure that you are following the rules and adhering to that agenda. I missed the trees a lot and just, like, feeling the earth under my feet. So had to come back for that reason.
I would say, and this has nothing to do with anything, like, relevant to music, but I know a lot of performers who immediately struggled with intense seasickness when they went out. Did you have anything like that?
Or not really.
You're one of the lucky ones?
Yeah, I handled it. I kind of liked it, the rocking you to sleep thing. Mm. But I don't know.
I can't imagine signing up for a gig and then realizing, oh, I'm going to be nauseous the whole time.
Yeah. There were some people like that I felt really bad for, but didn't happen to me.
Was there any, like, seductive element where you could see yourself kind of just, like, it seems like a job that you could basically, like, do forever.
Yeah, you could. There were a lot of people that did.
Made a lifestyle out of it, right?
I mean, it does feel like you're on vacation half the time. But for me, there was some personal freedom missing. And that went along with personal expression. So the music I was playing was for the backup band for the guest entertainers. So it's like, I got really good at sight reading. They'd come on, bring their show, you'd read through it, one rehearsal, and play two shows right away. So it's like, you kind of had to get it, or at least some of it, you know, hang with some of it. And it gave me a good experience with becoming a chameleon and, like, figuring out all these different styles, right? But there was no personal expression in that. In fact, sometimes we would have to play Broadway shows where it was tracked. So in the house, you have some of the band, the live band, mixed in, but most of it is a track. So you're playing along to a click and you're kind of up there almost just for show.
Right. Kind of like a Chuck E. Cheese band.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt a little bit demeaning after spending my whole life studying and developing this skill. So I wanted to get out of that environment where I could at least, you know, speak my truth and not just play the music that people wanted to hear. This stuff that has become more entertainment rather than music.
Yeah. Two different jobs entirely.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
At any point, did you have to break your contract to leave because you got so sick of it, or did you stick it out through whatever
you... No, I tried to.
Really? Yeah.
They were like, you have 2 weeks left. You can just suck it up and stay. But right. That was at the end of 7 months. I definitely wanted to go home. I was really missing Denver, actually. Missing the people here, missing the songwriting that I knew was happening and creating. And it just seemed like my people were still here waiting for me. So I had to come back.
Well, that's like, it's such a nice feeling to know that people were waiting for you. Having done, when I was living in New York, a little bit of travel for gigs and being tempted to do cruise ships and other things like that, I think, especially not really having a community there, like being terrified that you'd be gone for whatever, from 6 weeks to 6 months, people just like do their thing without you. Like just show back up, hey guys, I'm back. And to be able to like grow roots in a community and like build a career like based on the relationships is hard to do if you're gone.
Yeah. Half the year. I didn't feel like I really did that before I left, but I guess it was more like the people I met at school. I knew that we all shared similar visions, and Cassidy Bacon being one of them, our mutual friend. So when I came back, I moved in with her in Fort Collins, and we started just like encouraging each other to write more and play more. And we started a group together and kind of, you know, half her songs, half my songs, and we would work them out. And that's when we both came to Denver, like about 3 months after I'd been back in Colorado. We were like, okay, got to move to Denver and start making this really happen. Yeah.
And then, you know, so cruise ship going in between mm-hmm. a degree, like what is the mindset of trying to like dig into the community and build a career besides obviously like getting mm-hmm. a good teaching gig? Like what's your mindset?
Yeah, teaching gig was number one, because that first summer I was still just playing weddings and kind of freelancing gig to gig, you know. So after I had my teaching job, I felt a little more secure and I didn't have to work five jobs at once anymore. And then I was kind of just in this place with jazz and the scene here where I didn't really feel comfortable or welcomed. And I don't know exactly why that was. Somewhat of a misogynist tinge.
I was gonna say, throw someone under the bus right now. Let's do it.
I don't know. There's no specific person, but it was a man's world, definitely. You know, it was very obvious, and I just didn't like some of the attitudes that I got while I was in that scene. So I removed myself and was kind of like in a little bit of a place where I felt a little hopeless about ever being good at jazz. So I kind of just took a step back. I was like, you're never going to compare to the players here. And I just felt overwhelmed by the process of continuing to work 8 hours a day, you know, like as I was in school, continuing that kind of agenda to get to the top of jazz in the scene, or how people defined that, right? Yeah. So that's when I kind of just was like, I want to start writing my own music, explore that, not have any rules about what I can and can't play, and just kind of open it up to more of that.
When you were like kind of confronting those feelings, did you have to step back and ask if you even like wanted it in the first place? Because it's one thing when you get like obsessed and you work 8 hours a day for years, but like those people up there, I want to be among them. And so this work is worth it, even though it's miserable right now. But if you step back and like, all right, so this is miserable right now, and I don't even know if I want that.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I don't want to be among that top percent anymore because it doesn't seem worth it. So the
what
stress
am I hustling
to get
for
there?
If I don't even want their life.
Right. Yeah. It was like, whose approval am I really seeking right now? So I turned inward back to my own approval and just feeling good about what I was doing. And I know that music has always been therapeutic for me. And when I'm playing piano, my mind is able to process emotions and very complex things you wouldn't expect to be able to do while you're playing an instrument. But it's like, I don't know what about it. It's just super healing. So I knew I had to keep expressing myself and saying something. I've always liked poetry, so I started kind of trying to pair more of the music with poetry. I'd written a little bit in high school, but nothing I remember. Yeah.
So this is when you start kind of developing your voice as a songwriter?
Yeah. And then it wasn't very long after that where some people reached out to me, wanted me to start hosting a jam with them. So I had an open mic space for people with a whole band set up where people could come and play. For about 2 years I did that here in Denver. And then towards the end of the first year, I kind of found some other players from UNC, actually. And they asked me to start a project with them. And at first I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I have time. I don't know if I want to do that. Like, I always have some initial resistance whenever someone approaches me, just like, oh, what if I fail? What if I disappoint? What if I, you know, making mistakes is still hard to recognize as being a good thing.
So is the open mic karaoke situation still a thing, or is that kind of?
Well, it's a little different now. It's moved locations. There's not a full band, but I do host every Monday at this bar called Pride and Swagger. We do live piano karaoke, and I bring like 100 different Broadway books. And so you can sing musical theater, or you can sing your own songs, or you can try and do a pop song, or I'll play something, just read it off guitar tabs, you know.
Where the sight reading has come majorly in handy, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. And it's fun for me to get paid to practice like that.
And were they super welcoming? Did you pitch that idea? Like live?
No, someone approached me for that as well. And again, I was like, I don't know if I want to do this. But I'm really glad I have, because I've found such a good, supportive LGBT community there. Yeah.
Good deal. And so, you know, you're saying, and then some UNC people approached you about starting an original project. Is that currently, is that Moonglade?
Yep.
Very nice.
So we just were able to headline the Bluebird Theater along with some other local bands in town, Ramachandra, Ghost Tapes, Caitlin Williams, and sold a lot of those tickets. So that's good leverage with AEG to try and play some good shows in the future. You know?
It's huge. I was there 2 weeks later for like a major touring act, and you sold just as much as they did. And that was a blast. And we talked to Caitlin Williams last weekend. Yeah. And part of our conversation was talking about kind of like elbowing your way into the boys club of like Live Nation and AEG, like getting from the small independent rooms into like, because there are amazing venues in Denver, but it's very gatekeeper driven.
Yeah, it is.
So that was a huge night.
And I'm lucky that I haven't had to really do as much of that elbowing. Connor Torones, the guitar player in our band, is really great with the sending the emails and having those conversations with the boys clubs. So I'm glad I don't have to do that. But I do a lot of the writing and rehearsing and like just trying to come up with where can we go next. Of course, it's collective.
Yeah.
And you have some music out. What kind of are you currently working on? A next project, a tour, more shows? What's the current status of the band?
Well, Moonglade is, we have an EP out, self-titled EP, but we're working on recording a full-length album. So we're going to try and do that within the next year, but not putting a time constraint on it because we want it to be really good. And then hopefully do some touring next summer. I have another project that kind of has brought me back into the world of improvisation in a way I didn't expect. And that's called Nothing Is Everything. So that's a trio of people, but we all kind of take turns doing different things in that group, and there's no set like instrumentation. So April Chung plays flute. And she's also a yoga instructor, and she does some guided meditation during this. She'll recite poetry. She also has a hong drum, one of those like pitched round kind of steel looking drums. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah.
He does.
It has like 8 different pitches on it. Really, really beautiful. We use singing bowls. We have another player, Zay Rios, is a percussionist who studied ethnomusicology. So he plays all these different world music sounds, tons of percussion, but he's also a singer and he has some native flutes as well. And I will dabble with my synthesizer. And so we kind of mix acoustic with electronic. And then I also sing in the group a little bit without words usually. And that's a completely improvised structure every time that we play. It's new. And we might talk about concepts. Like we've had shows based on the elements before. But our shows aren't even shows. They're more like these interactive creative spaces where people might be painting or sculpting or reciting their poetry or laying there relaxing or dancing or, you know, it's just kind of come as you are, be with us, and the music and the sound is all going to change depending on who's there and what kind of space it is and what needs to be said. So in playing with them, I've learned that the most important part of music is listening.
That's like so refreshing and outside of the box.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been great for me to get back into that world of improvisation without worrying so much about the rules and the structure. Because jazz is still very structured in a lot of ways. So this is a little bit more like, wow, I'm going to get used to making ugly sounds right now or creating a lot of tension or disrupting. And then how can we navigate that and come back to a place of harmony? And yeah, it's really, really interesting.
So with the direction that your career has kind of changed a little bit, would you change anything about what you've done in terms of college and like the jazz experience? Or maybe do you have any advice for kind of young jazz musicians, especially women coming into the industry? And what would you kind of say about that?
I wouldn't change anything. I'm really glad that I went to UNC and made the connections there with the people I did. I learned a lot from that program. I appreciate that it's based in tradition. And I think it's really important to understand where that music comes from and the stories behind it, the cultures that have shaped American music. My only advice, let's see, I guess looking back, I wish I would have had a little bit more of my own willpower rather than waiting for people to approach me, like going out and seeking what I really wanted, or rather than just accepting whatever they paid me, you know, demanding that I'm actually worth more. So, yeah, just the basics of business, standing up for yourself, really. I think that's important, especially in the jazz scene when you're going to be around guys that are trying to be all egotistical and like, you know, standing out with that better than you kind of vibe. Being able to bring them back down to a place of, hey, we're all human right here.
Absolutely. You know? Was there, probably not enough, but any discussion at UNC about like, all right, when we kick you out of here, like, here's how you like get gigs and advocate for yourself? And was there an element of the business? Or?
I took a music business course, and it had a lot more to do with like licensing and
I remember that taking sort something of like stuff. That too. It just like was the breakdown of like, here's how publishing works.
Right.
Like,
yeah. But not so much like real life in Denver. How do you do this? And I think that they've gotten better about offering courses like that, or at least like discussions and seminars or whatever, where you can come and find out all the jobs that you could get. But no, there wasn't a whole lot of that. It was kind of just like, okay, jump into the scene. And when I got here, what I saw in the jam sessions that I went to, when I stopped going to the jazz sessions and I went to more of the singer-songwriter open mics, I saw a lot of guys with guitars, right? And almost no girls It would be like Cassidy and me at an open mic. And so my first step was, where are the women? Let's get them out here. They need to be singing just as much as these guys with their guitars. Like, it just didn't make sense because I knew they were here. It's like all these people that I knew and that even had bands, but they didn't feel the support to come out and be in that scene. There was no equal representation. So that was my goal in hosting the jams, was creating a space where women felt comfortable to come out and share. And then just like going out as much as I could so that, you know, other women wouldn't be the only one there.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. And like, you know, talk about, I mean, maybe you learned it the hard way, but being able to advocate for yourself that way and like, all right, I don't see a place for me. And so I'm going to create the place for me because I imagine other people are looking for the same thing.
Yeah. It was a lot of like really loud guitar. You know what I mean? So part of creating the space was just playing softer and getting people's attention that way. And doing these different styles that they weren't used to. And then the other half of it was engaging with people when I was not playing, having those conversations that are more than, how's your day? You know, small talk sort of things you talk about every week with the same people at the same jam. Mm-hmm. That was my frustration. It's like, let's talk about something real right now. I know you don't actually feel the way you're saying because I can see it on your face. Like, so I kind of pushed conversations as well in a direction that I wanted to be more authentic. And so I was hoping that they would feel that as well.
Have you been rewarded with that?
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to see how the scene that I'm in is more appreciative of each other than it used to be. And people express that more freely now, even just like hugging each other when they see when you're greeting someone, or, you know, this friendly kind of attitude between people. There's not a lot of times where I see ugly competition and like cutting others down. It's kind of like, we understand there's space for everyone here and everyone has a voice. So
that's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's great that you've taken the steps to kind of create the scene that you would like to see, you know. And kind of on that note about Denver at large, what do you think are its assets as a music city, and what are some things that you think it really needs if it's gonna like be able to like take the jump, be taken more seriously, offer musicians more opportunity, however you want to interpret that?
Yeah. I think that the assets that music here, Denver has, let's see. There's just so much music. There's so much variety, and there's so many places where you can play music. Everyone here wants to hear music. There's like, the community wants it. So that's one of the great assets
it
here.
It does seem like people actually show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the number of venues is nice too. We struggle with that a little bit in Boston, that seemed like the constant question was, where do we go to
play?
Right.
And Denver has more venues than Nashville. Like, for some reason, we got lucky with that. I think that what we need more of is showcasing the diversity and more of these do-it-yourself type shows where it's not just audience on the stage or audience out there and then performer on the stage, you know, where there's like this clear division between people. And I would like to see more co-creative, collaborative, do-it-yourself type things, or just spaces based around actual community and interacting. And that means having conversations, not just singing at people. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something like things that are more interactive. You seem like you really want to drive actual connection and conversation, and not just like, how can I sing at people more?
Right.
Where do I get more opportunity to like,
yeah, I'm not really worried about exposure or making it in the business or even turning a profit from it. It's, to me, the genuine part of music, I mean, the reason we sing and express things comes straight from emotion, right? Like, if you can cry, you can sing. It's
I like that.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to turn Denver into this like super profitable hub. To me, I'd like to see people let their walls down and be more vulnerable and be more authentic and be more real about the struggles they go through to get to where they are.
I love that.
That's beautiful.
Anything, JB?
No, where do you kind of hope to see your life going in the foreseeable future now that you have a lot of students on your hands, but luckily you do have the flexibility to kind of you know, take some time off. Where do you kind of hope to see things going?
I'd like to tour with both of my projects, Moonglade and Nothing is Everything. And not just touring in the U.S., traveling outside of the country, really appealing to me. I just got my own place, so I'm looking forward to having space to like write more and create more and be more introspective. Long term, though, I see myself not in a city at all, just getting back to the land and nature and, you know, living a little bit more secluded. The energy of the city is a lot for me.
Yeah. You get overstimulated.
Oh yeah. I have to get out of town like every week.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, beautiful.
That's good. I think like maybe the only other question for selfish purposes, can you think of like a few other people, you know, in this community that you think are doing amazing things that need highlighted more and that we should talk to?
Yeah, Armando Lopez, do you know him?
No, I do not.
I don't think
he's a great reed player, all these different saxophones and clarinet, and he has a brass band here in town, like New Orleans style, big brass band, and he does a lot of social activism as well with his music, and he's a great community organizer, so I think he would be a really good person to talk to about the Denver scene. He also grew up here, so he has quite a lot of insight. Yeah.
Love that.
Great.
Well, we'll reach out.
Yeah. Thank you so much for stopping in and talking to us.
Yes.
And thanks, Mom, for stopping in and popping in.
All right. Let you guys have a great rest of your week here. Yeah. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank
we'll talk to you soon.
Yep.
Blossoms amongst the trees and tears, I remind myself year after year. Whoa. I find instead I have gained a new perspective time and again. Clockwork running back and forth, alarming pain to remember your worth. Dearly beloved, we gather today to celebrate. Wow, yeah. Sun-kissed and wind-blown, free to roam. Whoa, I'll marry the mountains and the seas. Sun-kissed and wind-blown, free to roam. is home sweet home. Ooh. Home sweet home. Oh. 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 Oh.
That's it for now. Thanks for listening. If you enjoy what you hear, please consider subscribing, rating, and leaving a review. If you want to learn more about what we're up to, you can go to thebartonbros.com and find us at The Barton Brothers on Instagram and Facebook. We will see you next time.